Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball Breakfast. Ireland's sports breakfast show.
And Mbappe, and look, I've been a long sceptic of Mbappe, I thought, you know, because he had it too easy.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Kevin Byrne is with us this morning to talk to us about a fairly epic Katie Taylor fight. Kevin, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, fellas. All good here.
Yeah.
There's a few things, really, that we wanted to talk about specifically. Maybe we'll come back to the fight itself. But what's next now? If you're Brian Peters and you're sitting down to plot a course with whatever promoters, and obviously we know it's going to be Eddie Hearn involved at some level, what's next, do you think?
I suppose Taylor will want to retain her undisputed status. So you have to really go through and see if there's mandatory challenges to take. I think Taylor at this stage deserves something of an easier fight and maybe a mandatory challenger just to keep her belts. But I suppose they're always going to be aiming, and Taylor especially, the nature of the beast and the nature of the promotion around her is every fight needs to be a kind of a spectacular at this stage. She's just done a year out of the ring and came back without any problems. So she's shown that she can take time off now and come back for a proper doozy. So I would imagine that in an ideal world, they'll plan for a stadium fight in Ireland next summer. Whether or not that can take place is anyone's guess. They failed a couple of times before in bringing that stadium fight to Dublin. Obviously, the saga of Croke Park has gone on and on and on. Taylor was supposed to fight Amanda Serrano in Dublin last year. That was set for the Three Arena. And then Chantelle Cameron came in as a substitute, and then she rematched Chantelle Cameron at the Three Arena as well. The Croke Park thing failed. Will they get it through again? I don't know. Eddie Hearn, Katie Taylor's promoter, has started working in a different way in the last year or two. He basically he's backed up by the Saudis at the minute, you know, so he's finding himself able to put on shows that he mightn't have been able to before. He effectively said that he didn't want to pay the extra money that Croke Park would cost. Croke Park was going to cost more than Wembley, so he didn't want to do it, despite being a massively profitable promoter, you know, having enough money in the bank to cover the shortfall, didn't want to do it. But now he's got the Saudis behind him, and that makes it a little bit more intriguing. If they back up a promotion like Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano 3 or Katie Taylor versus Chantelle Cameron 3 at Croke Park, pay the shortfall, sponsored by Rhea season, that could be a runner. Would Croke Park go for that? That's to be seen. But I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened next summer.
In the midst of all that as well, you've got to add in the money that Jake Paul would bring as well. And so maybe that's where the shortfall also gets helped. Whatever people think about the Paul Tyson fight, this fight wouldn't have happened without that other one. So there's definitely, you got to understand that there's a complex story being told here, right?
Absolutely. And I think there are differences in personalities there between Jake Paul and Eddie Hearn. I think they despise each other, I think, at this stage. Hearn is bringing Jake Paul to court for defamation about an accusation made after the first Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano fight, in which basically Paul said that Hearn bought the judges. Hearn has gone after him on that. They tried to deny him certain bits of access. They tried to deny Hearn certain bits of access in Texas. They don't like each other. So I couldn't really see a co-promotion happening in Dublin next year. But, you know, if it makes dollars and makes sense, and they could put by next summer, they could have put their differences aside. Look, you've got the bizarre spectacle in boxing at the minute of Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn, who'd never actually met each other until, I think, last year, suddenly going around holding hands with Turki Alashiki from Saudi Arabia, because it made sense, you know, because they were basically, they got enough recompense to put their differences aside and act together. So yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see anything happen in this one, and I certainly wouldn't be shocked to see Taylor against Serrano again. This fight has generated so much controversy. It was said to have been watched by 50 million households by Netflix, making it probably the most watched women's sporting event of all time. 50 million households could mean 100 million people around the world watched this fight. And it delivered as well. So will people want to see it again despite it being 2-0 to Katie Taylor? I think so, yeah.
Well, let's just play you this. This is Clarissa Shields in the immediate aftermath of the fight. This is before she'd had a chance to look at replays and stuff. And maybe, I think she was at it, so maybe she didn't hear the commentary. But she called the fight for Taylor and explained why.
Let me ask y'all both something. Did the right person win the fight between Serrano and Taylor?
Now, I put my binoculars on today and I watched the fight through these clear lenses that makes me get closer to the ring.
Expert eyes.
I thought Amanda had the bigger shots in the middle and the beginning of the fight. But who landed the better shots, who did the countering, who had better defense, it was Katie Taylor. I knew the fight was going to be close, but once the headbutt happened, I mean, Katie got real smart, kept aiming for the cut, throwing big hooks at the cut. Amanda's defense up top was not together to where she can, she just walked there and stalked her down. And Jordan, the same one that I got on.
Yup, those same ones. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm 11.
So she walked her down and she was trying, but Katie fought off the back foot. She countered, she circled her. Amanda did not cut off the ring. I think that Katie won the fight by a hair.
So that's an independent broker who isn't Irish telling us that Katie Taylor won the fight. What did you make of it, Kev?
Absolutely. I mean, like, Clarissa Shields will be a friend of Amanda Serrano's more than Katie Taylor. She's an admirer of Katie Taylor, but she's also a rival in that both of them are striving to be kind of seen as the first lady of boxing, and both of them are striving to become effectively the greatest female boxer of all time. I think she did offer a neutral voice there, Clarissa Shields, and I do agree with her. On the night, now, I was victim to the buffering problems that fans around the world were as well, and it was difficult to kind of focus. It was difficult to actually score the fight as it happened because you're more concerned with keeping your Netflix, your stream up and running effectively. And I was almost surprised when Taylor's hand was raised at the end because you could feel Serrano coming on strong. But I rewatched it last night with different commentary, and it is amazing how much of a difference it made. I thought Katie Taylor was very much more of a clear winner than before. Yes, she didn't probably land the biggest shots of the entire fight. They probably came from Serrano at the end of the first round and during the 10th. But for enough rounds of the fight there, I thought Taylor was a convincing winner. And I thought she bullied Serrano almost in some ways. She was using her distance well. She was just staying back, using her footwork to coax Serrano in. And like the punch stats, which are, you know, ridiculously one-sided in Serrano's favour, she threw more, she connected more. But the amount of time Serrano just threw out like a jab, just trying to get close, she'd miss it. She'd throw another two or three, and then she'd throw her left hand. So by the time she'd come in, she's thrown five punches, and then Taylor would sting her with one or two. Serrano would try and counter, and then Taylor might hit her again on the way out. So Taylor might have connected three shots. Serrano's thrown seven or eight and maybe landed one, and Taylor's moved out again. Now, obviously, the two of them got closer. There was all the stuff with the head, the cut. I was also taken last night on my rewatch with just how negative Serrano's corner was. I don't think they did her any favours at all. They were quite downbeat from an early stage. Now, I understand why when you saw the scale of the cut. It was really nasty. And you rarely see fighters being allowed to continue when a cut is that bad as well. But I thought Taylor did her job very well. She was obviously drawn into a firefight in the second half of the fight, which we know she loves. But she's quite capable in those circumstances as well. She seems to enjoy it. And I think she had a good night at the office.
Hey, Kev, I suspect I very much know the answer to this question, but did Amanda Serrano and her corner have a point about the headbutting?
Possibly a little bit. I think okay. A lot of what they were saying then did Serrano no favours. Oh, you're only losing this because of the headbutts. Taylor's a dirty fighter. All she's got is her head. I think that's absolute nonsense. I don't think Taylor's a dirty fighter. I do think she's got a will to win, which is unmatched almost in sport. And, you know, the fight got rough, as Taylor said, and when they got in close, Serrano comes in with her head too. Like, she pushes forward, and some of Taylor's defense is to is to duck underneath as the shots are coming through. Summer Taylor's defence is to duck underneath and then come up with these swing and slash and hooks. Her left hook was tremendous all night, and especially after Serrano was cut to the right eye, Taylor's left hook kept connecting with that. Like, she really, once the cut was there, Taylor went to work on it almost like a surgeon. Yes, of course, some of the cuts were, like, the cut was effectively caused by a clash of heads. Quite natural when a southpaw and an orthodox fighter come together. Did Taylor use her head on purpose? I'm not sure, but she definitely, when they were in close together, clinching, Taylor did push her off with the head. But look, she was sanctioned for it. She did lose a point, which could have proved pivotal in the, she won the fight by 1 point on all three judges' scorecards. I suppose had the referee come in and taken another point, you would have had a draw at that stage. I don't think she was throwing intentional headbutts. But I think she's happy enough when it gets dirty to have her own way.
Did you think that point deduction was fair?
I wouldn't argue with it. Yeah, I think you watch it up close, and you watch the slow motion replay, which really focuses in on them, and the heads have come together. You do kind of see a little bit of a snap in Taylor's neck, just off me. You know, she just pushes her off, uses the head to push her off, which is an illegal move in boxing. So, yeah, I suppose you can't argue with it at that stage. Like, Roy Jones Jr. on the commentary, like, probably the only unbiased voice, I think, on the Netflix commentary, given that Rosie Perez, who was commentating, is a Puerto Rican Brooklynite, just as Serrano is, and she was talking about her friend effectively boxing in there. But Roy Jones Jr. Said it was not a point deduction worthy, and Taylor is not a dirty fighter as well.
My recollection of Ricky Hatton Costazu is that Ricky Hatton puts his head down and pushes Costazu back for the entire duration of that fight. It's just a thing in boxing as well, isn't it? Like,
it's kind of, I suppose you think about soccer as well. Like, if you march forward, like, or football, I'll get shot for saying soccer, but if you march forward with your head and you kind of push someone off, you haven't headbutted them. But how many times have you seen a player just do that little neck movement, that just little half-inch neck movement, and then the other player jumps on the ground, oh, I've been headbutted, and the referee has to send the player off. It's kind of like that. Once the kind of neck twitched, referee probably felt he had to take action. Serrano's corner were screaming at him as well, encouraging the referee to take a point off. And when he did, it could end up costing Taylor the fight. And I think that would have been harsh too. But in terms of the actual point being taken off, I probably couldn't argue with it too much. I think she did use the head a little bit to get the job done, and it did.
Serrano nailed Taylor in the first round with a hefty punch that Taylor bounced off the ropes. And were you concerned at that point?
A little bit. I think Taylor had won the first round quite comfortably at that stage. And it's just that she did, you know, whack Taylor and move her back to the ropes. Taylor actually landed a counterpunch right after that, and then Serrano landed her next shot as well. So I don't think Taylor was as uncomfortable. So yeah, when you're watching it live, there's stress there, isn't there? You're kind of you're concerned for the plight of both boxers at the time. But I suppose watching it back, knowing that she survived it, it didn't look half as bad really. A left right combination in the 10th round really rocks Taylor now, but she still survived. And she came back battling. She was the one throwing punches with venom as the fight closed off as well. So she's very hard to push back. And as her trainer, Ross Enemate, says, no one's really going to stop Katie Taylor. Like, the best, Amanda Serrano's had the best go at it. And she's done everything she can. She's thrown her full arsenal at Taylor. And she hasn't really dented her.
I'd say you would have had high expectations going into this fight after their encounter in Madison Square Garden in April 2022. Did it live up to those expectations, this fight, this past weekend?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, it was as good, if not better. I've seen some journalists say. I'd say it was as good anyway, for sure. It's a brilliant fight. It became ultra violent halfway through, especially with the cut over Serrano's eye, which did affect the outcome of the fight. I think, you know, it was a disgusting gash over Serrano's eye, and I'm shocked she was allowed to continue. And it can't help but have influenced how she fought. It certainly influenced how Taylor fought, because those left hooks were like extremely violent towards Serrano's eye, and accurate as well. So, like, Taylor did a great job of capitalising on the injury. But just with the blood and the drama and the pace of the fight and the way it kind of swung, like, it started off quite well with Taylor boxing, like I say, on the back foot, catching Serrano. Maybe she might have lost that first round just because of the one or two big shots at the end. But Taylor made up ground. She probably won the second, third, fourth round. And Serrano needed to come back into it, and she did. And by the end, they were just completely battling it out. And it was for judges, I suppose, is which fighter did you like? did you like Serrano's 7 or 8 punches where she lands 2, or did you like Taylor kind of waiting and then throwing 3 and maybe landing 2 of them, landing their combinations?
And in the end, it was like a hair's breadth between them. I suppose there isn't a hair's breadth really between them. She wins the fight by 2 points with the point deducted, which would be a clear enough victory for the referee or the judges, I mean.
Absolutely. I think she's won both fights about 6 rounds to 4. And, you know, that's clear enough, isn't it, really? I suppose you don't have to win all 10 rounds to win a contest. But it was absorbing, it was gripping, and you'd watch them again. I think if they fought 10 times, every fight would be a potential fight of the year candidate, because Serrano doesn't have a backward step in her. She will just keep marching Taylor down all 10 rounds until she's forced to quit or pulled out, and that's not going to happen either. So, yeah, I think you can put these two fighters together. As Joan said, this is the Ali Fraser of women's boxing, and they can just go at it and have ding dong battles. And Taylor could win the first 5 on points, but you still wouldn't have her an overwhelming favourite if they fought a 6th time.
The point about the immediate aftermath in the ring, Katie says, "Let's go for 12 rounds, 3 minute rounds." I'm like, maybe not. Maybe just dial that one back. The 20-minute fight suits Taylor definitely, and as she gets older, it's only going to suit her more, right?
It suits the spectacle for sure, because you're having 20 minutes of a sprint, where both fighters are frenetic, full gun for the entire 20 minutes. If it was stretched out to 36 minutes, it would definitely change the fight. The perception is that would suit the brawler Serrano, give her more time to do damage and then capitalize on said damage in a round. I'd be intrigued to see it at this stage, though. Serrano has, you know, broken a barrier to go fighting championship distance, you know, 12 by 3 minute rounds. Taylor says she wants to, you know, bring it on. I say I'd like to watch it.
And so that would be next for you, if you were advising here. Don't do anything else. Capitalize on the heat that's in this relationship at the minute. Have that fight, and then whatever final fight afterwards, if there's going to be another one.
If I was advising Katie Taylor, I don't think she'd have had quite as successful a career. But luckily for her, she's got Brian Peters in her corner, and he hasn't really taken a wrong move with Taylor. We saw him, and he didn't really take a wrong move backstage either. I'm sure you saw the video clip of Eddie Hearn being denied access to the press conference, and then Brian Peters taking matters into his own hands and ensuring that Hearn sat up beside her. But yeah, I think it's such a great rivalry, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. I'd put them together again. It's what Katie Taylor wants at this stage. She's 38 years old. She's conquered boxing effectively. You know, she's an undisputed champion at lightweight, an undisputed champion at light welterweight. She's had her homecoming. So now what does she want? She probably wants a couple of things in boxing at this stage: to fight in Las Vegas and to fight in a stadium in Dublin, Crow Park. And the people who are behind her and the people who run her career owe that to her, you know, just to give her exactly what she wants. She's earned it. So let's see if they can produce the goods.
Kev, this is a rudimentary question and it probably deserves a big answer, but what makes Katie Taylor such a special boxer? If we take away the Irish bias and everything that we love about her, if you just look at her purely in objective boxing terms, why is she so extraordinary?
I suppose it's a will to win, really, that you know, all the greatest sports people in the world have, just a refusal to lose, something that can't be denied. So she has the fitness, she has the discipline, like, which is one of the greatest skills in sport. You know, she doesn't drink, she doesn't smoke, she doesn't live a bad life outside of boxing. So she has the discipline, but she also has, the DNA. You know, her father was a boxer as well, and her mother was involved in boxing circles as well, but her father was a competitive boxer. So she has, you know, she's kind of born with that talent. She has the will to win, which is, you know, you can't quantify her will to win effectively. And she has the experience at this stage as well. Like, she broke ground with the first sanctioned female boxing bout in Ireland in 2001. Like, that's 23 years ago. So she has all this experience. She came up in an era for women's boxing where she was allowed to get experience all over the world as an amateur. She broke barriers at bringing to the Olympics. So she has all this experience, all this athletic talent, this extraordinary will to win, incredible discipline, and she has the people behind her as well, doesn't she, Taylor? She, you know, she's supported, and I think in everything she does, it's an extraordinary mix of things that are behind her. But she does what she wants. She's the boss, really, you know, and she,
yeah,
it's her ambition and it's her direction. And yeah, so there can't be many more big nights left in her career at this stage. But I think I know the people in Ireland are enjoying it, and people around the world are as well. There was a big reaction to this fight now. Just like seeing on social media, you put up a post and you might get 100 reactions, and it almost seems more so people thought Serrano won the fight, you know. But there were plenty voices of reason, I think, arguing that Taylor did as well. But there was definitely a lot of support for Serrano in this fight. This one is split opinion, big time, and especially in America. And if you're watching it on the Netflix commentary and stuff, where they're screaming about every shot Serrano lands, and maybe a little bit ignoring the good work from Taylor, I can see how you can come to that conclusion. But calmer heads, and you watch it again, I think you'll see that Taylor did the better work.
Rosie Perez, the Noel Gallagher of the boxing world, turns out, when it comes to co-coms. Who was doing the comms that you watched the alternative version on?
It was just French, and right, I just turned it down. On Netflix, you have the option to change to switch languages, so I just stuck it in French, just turned it down a little bit, and just had a watch on that, yeah.
We were talking about your plans on Friday morning, that you want to stay up for the Taylor-Strano fight and probably go to bed for Mike Tyson, Jake Paul. What ended up happening?
My little boy woke up, so I couldn't go to bed anyway. I had to bring him downstairs, and I had to... No, I feel like, look, there's... Jake Paul is empowered by the people who watch his fights and tune in, and I wasn't one of those people until Saturday night. I suppose after watching a big contest like Taylor against Serrano, you're going to be a little bit buzzing and you want to watch the main event. And I did, to my shame. It was a horrendous spectacle, really. Mike Tyson probably did well to survive. Most 60-year-olds, most 58, 59-year-olds aren't going to go the distance. And at least the worst didn't happen. Like, you know, there was a concern that Tyson, like, he didn't belong in a ring. We all saw the proof there. He didn't belong in a professional boxing ring, let alone against a man in his 20s. And that was proven. Like, Mike Tyson threw, I think I have it here, Mike Tyson threw 97 punches in the entire fight, 8 rounds. Amanda Serrano threw 127 in round 10. You know what I mean? he had no business there. He was rocked in the first round, and he did quite well to survive. Jake Paul afterwards said that, I was kind of saving Mike. I was kind of carrying him through. I didn't want to hurt him. You know, in a nice act to kind of give the former champ his dignity, which he immediately undone at the press conference by coming out and saying, I carry Mike Tyson, you know. Brilliant. Thanks,
Jake. I did this thing, but I hope you all noticed. Yeah. I don't like talking about my charity work here, but I just gave 20 million to the former champion of the world.
It's
amazing. I read those 97 punches. I think he landed, like, was it 18 or something? Tiny number. Yeah. But it was funny. There was a video doing the rounds, and forgive me now, I can't remember who posted it on X, but I think they had a boxing background themselves, and they were saying after about 15 seconds of the fight, Tyson had a split second opportunity where he could have knocked out Jake Paul, because Paul, I think, went for a haymaker and missed, and he left himself vulnerable. And this contributor's opinion was that Tyson himself didn't want to knock out Paul, but I would tend to lean on your analysis of it, that he just looked, even his walk to the ring, he just looked so sad in his eyes, Kevin. It was like he knew what was going to happen here.
Yeah, and I'm sure you saw during the Taylor Serrano fight when they had a little flash to backstage, and Tyson was there with his shorts off as well. So it was just one of those nights, wasn't it? Yeah, I'll have to check out that video column if there was a chance that he didn't take up. But like, I'm not sure he let Jake Paul off the hook. Like, Mike Tyson's been out of the ring for 20 years. You know, in that time he's been taking mushrooms, smoking weed. This year he had a burst ulcer. Yeah. He was defecating tar, vomiting blood. He has sciatica problems. He's in a wheelchair. He spent time in a wheelchair. It's a success for him, right, to get back in the ring and earn himself this kind of retirement fund of $20 million. Yeah. How many fighters in the past have ended up, you know, broke, like, and former world champions? Like, think about the end for Joe Lewis in Las Vegas. You know, a charity case, basically. Look at Sonny Liston in Las Vegas as well. Like, so many fighters have ended up with these horrible ends. Tyson, age nearly 60, has found a way to take nearly 20 million and do it by contesting. Like, I'm not saying I support the bet. I thought it was farcical. But then, if you don't watch it, change the channel. And I
watched it. So well, he took a leaf out of Johnny Sexton's book and said, "We lost, but we won," in a statement afterwards. You know,
winner.
He was influenced there, but in the same statement, he said he nearly died over the summer. So I mean, it is a remarkable achievement from a human perspective. Does Jake Paul come out of this looking any bit better whatsoever?
Worse, I think. You know, I mean, the guy's packing on pounds as if he's just gotten married for, like, you know what I mean? He's 27 pounds, I think, heavier than his last fight. He's got questionable people in his corner, in his team. I don't know how he's putting on such a weight gain. He's certainly eating his eggs and doing a lot of weights. I don't think he's a viable fighter, basically. You put Mike Tyson, who lost to Kevin McBride, in against Jake Paul. It's not a competitive fight. I think, let's face it, like 60 million households in America watched this fight. How many of them watched it to see Jake Paul being viciously knocked out by the former champion? I would say a great majority. It didn't happen. All that does is make people hate Jake Paul even more. You know, you can profit off that, though. You can have a very successful career from being that guy, like we saw in the 90s, Chris Eubank and Prince Nassim. Nassim loved by a lot of people, but a lot of people tuned in to try and, you know, to watch him being flattened. A lot of Floyd Mayweather's profitability was people tuning in to see him lose. You know, they didn't like his talk. Jake Paul has seen all this, and he's found a way to expand it even more. Every active fighter in the world wants a piece of Jake Paul. So anyone he picks to fight him is going to be basically winning the lottery. We saw like Carl Froch is looking to come out of retirement, but he's not the only one. Even like Artur Beterbiev, the undisputed world light heavyweight champion, wants a piece of him as well. Everybody wants to fight Jake Paul. And, you know, that's he is controlling what he does. He called out Canelo Alvarez after the fight. But do we really think he's going to get into a ring with Canelo Alvarez? I think everybody knows that they're just listening to nonsense, really.
What do you think is next?
For Jake Paul?
Yeah.
I haven't really sat down to think about what Paul's going to do now. Like, I mean, was that his 12th professional fight? Yeah. I watched his fight with Tommy Fury in Saudi Arabia. He lost that. I was going to say the only credible boxer he's fought so far, but Tommy Fury's not exactly a credible boxer either. He's
ranked 39th, I think.
Fury is ranked 39th. Wow, that's generous. That is generous. He is not good. And he didn't even have much experience. And before he fought Jake Paul, he'd fought a bunch of people with losing records or, you know, very, very poor records. I don't think Tommy Fury has a big future in boxing, and he's beaten Jake Paul. Jake Paul now has found himself, he's after exploding in weight now, so he's a heavyweight. So, I mean, there's 50, there's maybe 100 heavyweights in the world who'd beat him. Like, on the same night as the Jake Paul against Mike Tyson fight down at the National Stadium, Jack Marley retained his Irish heavyweight champion. Olympian Jack Marley would do bad things to Jake Paul.
We don't watch that, right? That's the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like, I mean, Jack Marley would take him out in the first half of a fight, I'm sure. He'd splinter his ribs. Like, Jake Paul would have no defense for it. A fighter like Marley would be able to close the distance, land his shots, and he would throw certainly more than Mike Tyson through 97 punches. Look, this was a TV show, effectively, that people tuned into out of a kind of a morbid curiosity.
Yeah. We all watch a lot of shit TV, right? Yeah. That's the truth. We do. And this was, for Netflix, it made a lot of sense. And you can see how something like this might happen again. While at the same time, I think there needs to be some credit to the Jake Paul organization for putting Taylor and Serrano on the same bill, because it did elevate that to a level that it should be at.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Jake Paul did when he entered into boxing, and I think he takes it seriously as well. I don't want to completely knock the guy. Like, I called him a gobshite on air to hear the other day, and fair enough, I think, in the way he goes about his own career. But in terms of promoting his boxing, he's leveraging his popularity or his fame effectively outside the ring to create what's looking like a very successful boxing business. I think he already had Netflix to the table to discuss his own options. And once he mentioned Mike Tyson to them, it was Netflix then who pushed it. We said, oh, we want that so badly. You know, we will make a fortune on this. Everyone will want to see this. And so it proved. But I do think that when Jake Paul entered into the boxing business, either him or the people who work with him decided, let's boost Amanda Serrano's profile here. Let's boost women's boxing. Women's boxing is the poor relation here. Let's do our bit. And I think you could call it a cynical decision in order to lend credibility to his own boxing chops, right? Which I probably would, but that doesn't mean it's not a good thing. You know, it's kind of like we said earlier on, giving to charity and then, oh, look at me, I gave to charity. But it's still a lot of money to give to charity if you're talking about like a contribution or something. So the fact that he's championing women's boxing and allowing giving Taylor versus Serrano to a co-main event platform in Dallas, you know, like the most watched female sports event, I think, in the world, is a good thing for women's boxing, because the uptick in women's boxing since Taylor Serrano won hasn't really taken place. There's been some epic bouts. You mentioned Clarissa Shields at the start, and she fought Britain's Savannah Marshall in an all-female card, and it was fantastic. But since then, things have slowed down. Most female boxers, Steve Bunce wrote an interesting article about it a few weeks ago. Most of the big names in women's boxing are only fighting like once a year. Opportunities are drying up. Saudi Arabia taking over the sport has not exactly led to many opportunities for female boxers. I think that the very first women's world title clash on a Saudi Arabia-backed show, which all the big shows at the minute, you know, certainly from Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn, seem to be linked with Saudi. Raven Chapman against Skye Nicholson only a couple of weeks ago on the Bivol Beterbiev card was the first women's boxing world title fight they had on. So, like, it's been slow. Now, they might change next year. And, like, I kind of mentioned, and I'm being a bit playful really, in that they might sponsor a Katie Taylor versus Serrano 3 card at Croke Park. I'm not sure that's going to happen. I haven't heard any like reliable information that that's going to happen. I'm more like looking into the crystal ball and saying this could happen. But the uptick in women's boxing hasn't really taken place since their fights, and you know, that's not Taylor or Serrano's fault. They're putting on the best show. They're laying down their lives almost like to promote their sport. And you'll notice Katie Taylor after her fight says, this isn't like, she doesn't say, oh, this is glory for me. She go, what a night for women's boxing. So she's doing her best. She's doing everything she can. And if someone like Jake Paul is actively supporting that, then that can only be a good thing for the sport.
Yeah, that's definitely in the positive side of the ledger for him, with all the rest of the boxing stuff probably in the negative. Kev, great to have you with us. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers, lads. Thanks. Yeah.
Hello, it's Owen Chahan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast. All right, we are turning our attention back to last Friday night in Dallas. Katie Taylor obviously getting the win against Amanda Serrano off the judges' scorecards. And naturally, a lot of the talk over the past couple of days has surrounded what happens next for both of these fighters. MVP Promotions are the guys who run the show for Serrano and for Jake Paul. And Nakisa Badarian is the co-founder of MVP Promotions and joins us now on the line. Nakisa, how are you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Owen.
So the last couple of days, it's obviously been an interesting experience, I'd imagine, for the Serrano camp. We saw that the blood was up after the fight on Friday night. Since the dust has settled, what has the mood music been like around Amanda Serrano and the camp?
Sure. I mean, look, the mood is one of pure joy and happiness. The event was a monster of a success. We just got the numbers in the last hour finally confirmed, and over 47 million people in the US watched Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano 2, and over 74 million people globally watched these two women put on a battle for the ages. When we put this event on Paul Tyson, we strategically wanted to make sure that Amanda was a big part of it. And her perfect dance partner to date has been Katie. And we knew by making them the co-main event, we would give women's sport an opportunity that they've not had before. So Taylor Serrano 2 is now the most viewed women's sporting event in U.S. history. So no matter what the end result was by the judges, Amanda came out a massive winner, as did Katie.
On that level, in terms of what it has done for their careers, there's absolutely no doubt about it. At the end of the day, I'm sure Amanda Serrano is one of the most competitive women on the planet. So for her to focus solely on that aspect of things, I'm sure is only half the story. So when you speak to her, when you speak to her coach, when you speak to her team, are they still a little bit pissed off about what happened on the judges' scorecards?
Yeah, I think, look, I think they obviously believe they won. I believe they won. If you look at the CompuBox stats, Amanda significantly outpunched Katie Taylor and at a higher accuracy rate. In fact, Amanda set the record for the most punches landed in female boxing history. But put that aside, you could say to the eye of the judges or to the eye of the consumer, the fan, the fight was pretty close. What wasn't close was Katie Taylor using her head to lead into the exchanges. And it did result in 1 point being deducted. But you could easily make an argument that Amanda could have won that fight easily because she way, way outboxed from a punch stat perspective Katie Taylor in that matchup. But end of the day, it's the decision of the judges what the outcome is, and we have to live with that. And you know, there is a review happening with the commission and MVP around the headbutting, but it's not an intention to kind of take away from what Katie achieved. We're very proud of what Katie and Amanda achieved together.
What is the review hoping to find out?
Just seeing if there's a case for a no contest in this bout, given the amount of headbutts that occurred throughout the evening, whether they were intentional or not.
Right. So in Katie Taylor's own words, it was completely accidental. Do you reject her version of events?
I think if you watch that fight at the end of the first round, Katie got caught pretty bad. Right. And if you go and listen to the audio of the corner men in her corner, they immediately asked her to change strategy and to kind of take a different tact in the fight. And she deployed that strategy brilliantly.
They didn't tell her to headbutt.
No, that's what they did not. They did not. Absolutely not. But my point is she adjusted her strategy and she, you know, she deployed it well. So I think if you look at the tape, there's plenty of times where Katie is leading with her head, not saying that's legal or not legal. The commission ultimately has to determine that, but it's pretty repetitive throughout the evening.
Is that not just what happens when a southpaw goes up against an orthodox stance fighter?
No, I don't think so. I think Amanda Serrano's fought a lot of orthodox fighters, and that hasn't been the case. She's only been cut twice in her career, both times against Katie.
One thing that I will say is certainly true is that when the cut does come up, you got to say Katie Taylor did a pretty good job on going after that cut. I don't believe that it was accidental. I do believe it was accidental 100%. And I think we're probably going to have to agree to disagree on that particular point, Nakisa. But one thing that's inarguable is that when the opportunity of the cut was presented, she knew what to do in that situation.
I think I am not for 1 second saying that Katie Taylor purposely cut Amanda Serrano. What I am saying is that Katie Taylor deployed a strategy where she led with her head that resulted in the cut, right? Those are two different things. I want to be clear on that. And I will say, yes, I agree with you that she very much so did target the cut once it was visible that there was a quite gnarly gash on Amanda's eye.
Did you go back and listen to the commentary afterwards? Because this has certainly come up for discussion as well over the past couple of days. Nakisa, the likes of Rosie Perez, also from Brooklyn, was on commentary. You had a broadcast that a lot of people really believed was heavily biased in Serrano's favour. To use the quote of somebody who knows a lot more about it than I do, Shakur Stevenson said the commentators were brainwashing the audience.
Shakur Stevenson, who signed to Matchroom Boxing, was one of the few people who actually came out and said he thought Katie Taylor won. The overwhelming sentiment online by anyone who knows boxing, by anyone who's a fan of boxing, by anyone who was in the stadium that night, felt that Amanda Serrano won. Having said all that, I have yet to say, you know, I think it was a robbery of Amanda Serrano. I think it was a close fight. Again, these two are two of the best athletes in the world, and they're made for each other. I do believe if you look at the stats and you look at the point deduction, it could have easily gone and should have gone ultimately to Amanda, but there was no robbery, as many people are saying. There was no clear cut. This person definitely won. It was a phenomenal match between two tremendous athletes.
Have you started to think what happens next, Nakisa? Because there comes with the whole dynamic here of where a fight happens, and with the location of a fight, it kind of comes with the power aspect of all of this. Like, it felt like a very MVP event on Friday night, which it was an MVP event. Is Amanda Serrano content with the possibility of doing, say, a matchroom event, a different promotion, if you guys are going to look for the trilogy? What are you thinking about when it comes to the next step here?
Matchroom boxing is irrelevant. MVP is irrelevant. This is about Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor and maximizing the opportunity for the athlete. Too often promoters are more focused about their own brand and their own face and their own opportunity versus what's best for the athlete. Amanda and Katie will fight again at some point, I'm sure. And, you know, the big winner that night was both Amanda and Katie, because now there's no trilogy in the contract. Had Amanda won, there was a pre-negotiated deal with pre-negotiated terms for the trilogy. But guess what? More people saw Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano fight than any fight in history, male or female, since the days of Muhammad Ali, other than Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson, right? So Taylor and Serrano just had the biggest fight in history other than Paul and Tyson. So the price of what they are together just went up meaningfully. So it's a great outcome that actually Katie Taylor won.
And of course, it means that everybody should get into a room and try and make sure that the trilogy happens, right?
Yeah, look, from my perspective, and in speaking with Amanda and Jordan and Jake, we're all about breaking barriers, making history, doing things that are not boxing. Boxing is a small ecosystem. Our goal is to grow that ecosystem. We broke every single record you could think of last Friday. And so we're thinking of ways of how do we elevate the next match for Amanda Serrano, whether that's with Katie Taylor, whether it's with Chantel Cameron, whether it's with Alicia Baumgartner, whether it's with, you know, any of the real greats in the sport. That's what we're focused on. But of course, there's a desire for Amanda and Katie to fight again. My hope is it will be a 12-round, 3-minute event, which, to be honest, in many ways favors Katie Taylor, given she is the more fundamentally experienced boxer with her amateur career, but really putting these two women on a stage that's equal to the men.
Do you think that it needs that to be on an equal footing with the men? Like, this gets brought up in a whole pile of sports, and I mean, Serena Williams isn't seen as inferior to her male counterparts because they play one set fewer in the Grand Slams.
So Serena Williams is a great example. Outside of Serena Williams, the only athlete in history who was a female and was the biggest star of their sport is who, Owen? Who do you think? Professional sport. Who would you think?
The biggest person who is a female and also the biggest star in their sport.
Yeah.
Oof, you're putting me on the spot here. I mean, is like, you tell me, is Caitlin Clark about to become the most relevant basketball player in the United States?
Not even close, right? There's only one athlete other than Serena who held that mantle. Ronda Rousey was the biggest star in the UFC for a period of time.
What about Simone Biles?
She's not a professional athlete. She's an amateur.
All right. Okay.
Professional sports. So when I look at that, and when I look at what we did at UFC, where I was chief strategy officer and chief financial officer, we treated the women 100% equal to the men in every respect, from the rules to the pay, to the promotion, to the advertising, to the opportunity. And I want the same for women's boxing. You don't have to choose to do it, but if you want to do it, you should absolutely have the right to be treated exactly as the men are. And that's what's important for Jake and I. That's what's important for Amanda.
When it comes to where it will happen, is there a possibility that there may be a rematch that takes place in Ireland?
I think the only way it happens in Ireland is if it's in Croke Park. I think if you heard Jake's interview with Mike Tyson, he made it clear that if, you know, that's where Amanda wanted to go, he would look to enlist the help of President Donald Trump to make it happen, given that to date, Eddie Hearn and Matchroom have been unable to find a way to make the fight happen.
And a large reason why they've been unable to make that fight happen is because of the security costs that are needed to run Croke Park for a fight like this, and Eddie Hearn has been unwilling to come up with that cash. However, Eddie Hearn's obviously struck up a pretty decent relationship with the Saudis in the past couple of years. If it were an Eddie Hearn run event propped up by Saudi cash, would that be something you guys are interested in?
We've shown that we don't really have a limitation in being able to execute massive events. We just put on the biggest event in boxing history, effectively, if you look at the entire marketing campaign and the execution of the event. So this isn't about Eddie Hearn or Saudi Arabia putting up the capital for it. If Amanda Serrano is willing to go to Croke Park, we will do everything in our power to make that happen if that's what Amanda wants. Amanda is in the driver's seat here. Amanda is the bigger star here. Every metric you can look at online, every metric you can look at from an interest perspective, every metric you can look at from a sentiment perspective, Amanda Serrano is the face of women's boxing, and we're going to act accordingly as such.
When you mean sentiment perspective, what does that mean?
Online sentiment. Who are fans more positive towards? Who do people think won? Who had the bigger audience growth day over day on their social media accounts? Every single metric that you look at, it's all about Amanda. Amanda Serrano is now the most followed female boxer in history. It was Leila Ali until this past weekend.
And when it comes to like audience sentiment, I get the thing about followers and all that, but is there an actual metric or a data point for sentiment? Like that sentiment, she's got greater
Amanda
sentiment
Serrano
than Katie Taylor.
One of 47 million people in the US, and she is the biggest star of boxing, yes. And by the way, Jake Paul, who is the biggest face of boxing as a whole, is driven by social media, because that's audience. Those are people who are engaged with you on a day in, day out basis. No doubt both Amanda and Katie have phenomenal fan bases in Ireland and Puerto Rico respectively, but those are two small populations, right? What really is the body of viewership is the US and mainland UK. And as you know, the US is significantly larger than the UK.
Yeah, can't disagree with that. On Eddie Hearn, I know you've said it's not about him, to a couple of my questions here. What did you guys say to each other in the ring the other night?
I think, look, Eddie was very happy that Katie won, and I would say over the top in his celebration. And, you know, we just had a discussion on his celebration. He was man enough to apologize and say he shouldn't have acted the way that he did. And I explained to him, you know, anything that was said during the fight, similar to what he was doing, the judges were sitting there, you know, it was just verbally trying to express our opinions, but it just didn't seem appropriate for someone to go into a ring and celebrate the way that he did, as established and successful and as much of a statement as he is for the sport of boxing. And it was two women making, you know, a massive moment for the sport, and all eyes were on us.
Yeah, it is about the two fighters. I guess, we don't really know Eddie Hearn at all, and there's absolutely no need for me to stick up for him whatsoever. If he were here, he might make the case that there's no need for Jordan Maldonado, a coach, to be butting in on an interview and saying that the headbutting of the opponent was illegal, or even for a fighter to question how dodgy or otherwise the judges might have been in their scorecards.
Well, those are the fighters and their trainers, right? No different than the post-fight presser. There was a lot of discussion around they didn't want to put Eddie Hearn in the press conference. The way that MVP looks at it, you know, I joined Jake Paul for the press conferences because him and I own the company 50-50, and he's there both as an owner, as a fighter. But outside of that, it's always our fighters who we have speak, because we want the media to hear from our fighters. We want the exposure to be on our fighters. So if you look at that post-fight presser, Katie didn't say much. It was more Eddie speaking, which is great. Eddie's a great speaker, and as I said, he's a recognized figure in the sport. But do that separately. Let Katie have her time. Let her have her moment. Go to the Matchroom social media handles. See what you see post-fight. What did they post post-fight about Katie Taylor, Owen? Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
That's what they posted.
You're going to tell me they posted Eddie Hearn, otherwise?
No, they posted zero.
Oh, zero.
They posted zero about Katie Taylor. They posted Skye Nicholson.
Right. Why? So that was it. That was the reason why Eddie Hearn was quote-unquote barred from approaching the top table on Friday night, was just purely to do with spotlight on Taylor is what you guys wanted?
If you look at any of our fighters, they go in there by themselves. If you look at any of our events outside of me and Jake sitting together, right, co-owners, the fighters go up there themselves. That's how we do it.
And he was about to do it a different way, and he was told to stop going up there.
Basically, I think our PR team said they only want the fighter and the trainer.
Right. Can I ask you about the co-main event?
Don't miss my point that I just said, right? Look at Katie Taylor just won the biggest fight of her life in front of the biggest audience in women's sports history in the U.S. In history, across all sports. There's no recognition of her.
There's loads of recognition all around the world. I mean, the fight was absolutely amazing. By Matchroom. I'm sure privately they're pretty stoked that they have
Skye Nicholson and not Katie Taylor.
I don't know. That's a question for them, I guess. But I'm sure they're pretty delighted that they've got Katie Taylor in their stable, and they're looking forward to potentially organising the next fight along with their friends MVP Promotions. The Tyson fight, the Jake Paul fight, was it better than you expected? Was it worse than you expected?
I think, look, when we made that fight, we didn't know what to expect, right? And the reason it was such an interesting matchup, and the odds reflected that, odds much closer than any fight you've seen at the you know, heavyweight levels, at the Canelo level, at the Gervonta Davis level, the odds were close from day one because it was hard to predict what it was going to be. Does Mike Tyson have one punch knockout power? Yes. I can make you a video of 400 different pundits that and experts that talk about Mike Tyson's going to knock out Jake Paul, including people who are current fighters, ex-fighters, etc. Was there a possibility that Mike was not going to be able to keep up with the youth and the stamina of Jake? Absolutely. And I think, you know, ultimately that's why Jake and I were focused on putting that fight on Netflix and making it free to those who actually subscribe to Netflix, which before this fight was 282 million people, post this fight a lot more. And I think very impressive performance by both men. For Mike Tyson at that age to come back in better shape than he was when he retired, to go in there against a young, strong guy. And for Jake Paul, 4 years into his career, 4 years into his career with 12 fights, no amateur experience, to go composed with full self-confidence in front of 72,000 people, face off against the baddest man on the planet. I'm beyond impressed by both guys.
Mike Tyson's performance is very impressive. Sorry, that's a question. I'm just clarifying that you thought he was very impressive on Friday night.
I thought for what he did, it was extremely impressive. The movement, particularly in the first few rounds, his peekaboo style at that age to continue to be able to be elusive was very impressive. Absolutely.
But he only threw 97 punches.
Correct. 2 minute rounds.
Yeah. So that's above or around what you thought he would throw? Because certainly the reviews have been, I guess, I think a lot of people actually were quite surprised by how ineffective he was. And even there was a sense of Jake Paul even being a little bit guilty about, you know, not wanting to knock him out or to not finish the job against him, which doesn't really speak volumes of a great sporting contest.
I think it speaks volumes to a great sportsman that he lost that killer instinct when he saw Mike starting to slow down. And Jake Paul has done more for the sport of boxing 4 years in than any 4 year in professional boxer or MMA athlete that you can mention. He's given back more to this sport across many different facets than any MMA fighter or boxer that you can mention. So I think Jake Paul did tremendously well, and I absolutely think Mike Tyson did tremendously well. More in the world watched boxing on that night than if you combine the last 5 years of viewership in boxing in total. Boxing was a massive winner. We had tremendous fights on that card. We had a tremendous environment. And boxing is at the forefront of global conversation, at the levels of EPL, at the levels of the NFL. Doesn't happen. Doesn't exist. MVP did that. Jake Paul did that. Amanda Serrano did that. Mike Tyson did that. And Katie Taylor did that.
It feels that the card was certainly really good for boxing entertainment and for the figure is going to record-breaking levels. And no doubt that Taylor Serrano had a part to play in that. But do you not think that Tyson Paul just wasn't very good for the sport of boxing, the sport only? Forget the entertainment and the business side of things for a moment. Do you not think it damages the sport a little bit?
How?
He's nearly 60.
How did it damage the sport?
Because you have this guy who is, as I say, nearly 60, who is entering into a ring where the whole objective is to get your head pucked off you, to knock the guy out. And at the end of the day, the very objective of the sport was shelved because Jake Paul felt a little bit guilty about going up against a guy who was
how
pretty
was it bad? Just tell me how it was bad. How did it take away from the sport? How did it reduce interest in the sport? How did it take away from getting young people interested in becoming boxers? When I walked into my son's school today, almost every single kid had watched the event. How is that bad for the sport, Owen?
What?
Explain that.
Are they more interested?
Who paid attention to the Latino night that happened the next day for boxing? How many kids were inspired to pursue this sport? How many new viewers did it drive?
Wait, are you saying that those kids are more interested in lacing up a pair of gloves because they watched Paul versus Tyson?
Absolutely, they're all more interested in boxing. They watched
the
entire.
More interested in lacing up a pair of gloves and participating in the sport after watching that?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. What do you think they're going to be more interested in? A highly technical bout between two individuals they've never heard of that don't bring any passion and excitement to it? I mean, I don't know what frame you're looking at it from, but it was a tremendous night for the sport of boxing.
I'm looking at it through the frame. No one can deny that.
If you're looking at it from a purist perspective of that wasn't exactly what I wanted to be from a boxing perspective of two great athletes, that you're thinking about it the wrong way. Boxing has become a smaller and smaller sport
I don't disagree with that last point, but I'm looking at this through the frame that you presented. Is this fight going to inspire the next generation to box?
Absolutely it is.
Right.
As Jake has said, some kid and many kids watched it. The stat, to tell you the stat, 56% of homes in the U.S. that night during the Paul Tyson fight were watching Paul Tyson.
Yeah.
So out of every two homes in the U.S., one of them was watching this event. And there's a lot of kids who watched the event and learned about boxing for the first time.
And
that's powerful.
And it got booed in the arena.
No, it got booed at some point. Yes, one round. Very common in boxing.
I don't disagree that Jake Paul has done positive things for boxing. My point is about this headline fight, himself and Mike Tyson.
This headline fight grew interest in the sport of boxing.
Yeah, and listen, I think in terms of like what Serrano earned, what Katie Taylor earned, it was in isolation a phenomenal night for women in the sport.
Wasn't it in isolation? Shadasia Green had 900,000 people watching her on a YouTube stream during this fight. That's not isolation. She became a champion for the first time. I don't know if you paid attention to the full card and the full offering, but there was something there for everybody to consume on a global basis. And many boxers got a tremendous opportunity and got eyeballs on them like never before. Never before. Look at the metrics. Anthony Joshua fought Daniel Dubois in the UK in front of 70,000, 80,000, 90,000 people. Look at the interest level of that fight globally. Even in the UK, we blew that out of the water in the UK. Not even close. Not even close. And every fighter on the card got those eyeballs, not just Paul Tyson.
Yeah.
So, you know, to say anything other than it was a tremendous moment to grow this sport is misguided. It's a snobby boxing view of the world in a sport that's now being less and less covered in the US by big media. We brought big media back to the table. While we're on this call, there's a press release going out saying 125 million people watched this fight.
I don't doubt that.
Tell me what other sporting event that you know of achieves those numbers at the professional level.
Yeah,
I'll tell you,
the numbers are phenomenal. The numbers are phenomenal.
The Super Bowl. So we brought the Super Bowl to boxing.
Yeah.
That's a huge win.
Oh, listen, from a business perspective, I do not doubt the impact of
boxing,
it being a good business thing.
In front of people's eyes, just like Muhammad Ali used to do. Muhammad Ali had the entire world watching the sport. He was the most popular athlete in the world.
Muhammad Ali was in the ring a number of years after he should have been in the ring as well, Nikisa, and I don't think that was necessarily a good thing for Muhammad Ali. So when it comes to comparing legendary boxers who are boxing well beyond their 30s, I'm not sure.
I'm like talking about the power of the sport.
Yeah,
we're doing
an
interview about boxing first and foremost.
One last thing is: do you think? Well, like one of my concerns about this, and like you can call it snobbery if you want, and you're completely welcome to have that view of this. But it was just like a line from one of my colleagues in Irish sports journalism, Gavin Casey, who writes for the 42. He said that he made the point basically that Taylor versus Serrano, if it's going to be a trilogy, needs to be latched onto something like Mr. Beast versus Larry Holmes. Like that, this is the sort of thing that is now being that it is attached to. Does it need to be attached to this thing that transcends sport, that is a lot worse than sport, that isn't really sport to a large degree?
I think your colleague missed the point here. 74 million people saw Amanda and Katie and they put on the performance of a lifetime. They will 100% carry their own event if they fight again. 100%, right? Like there's no doubt about it. The entire strategy was to give them more. The first fight, right? We released the numbers, Matchroom and MVP with DAZN. You remember how many viewers it had?
Not off the top of my head.
1.5 million. How many viewers did this fight have? 74 million.
Yeah.
They're going to carry their next fight.
And gut feeling, Nikisa, Croke Park for the trilogy. Gut feeling. I mean, like, leave all the head thinking to one side for a moment. Do you think it will happen one day for this pair? Because they are, you refer to them as the best dance partners out there. And I'm not going to disagree with you on that point.
If Amanda and Katie said they wanted to make that happen, I have no doubt Jake would do everything in his power to get the help of President Trump, who Jake has a very close relationship to. And I have no doubt that MVP and its partners will put in the capital required to put on the event.
Nikisa, thank you so much for being so generous with your time and congratulations on the success of Friday. It was definitely a big one for you guys.
Oh, and thank you, man. I appreciate the back and forth and the honesty.
Cheers. Chat soon.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm delighted to say that Katie Taylor's coach, Ross Enomide, is with us on the line. Ross, how are you getting on?
Good. How are you?
All good. Thanks a million for taking the call. We're 10 days on now from Taylor Serrano 2. Have you recovered? Have you come down? Because I presume that's a bit of a piece of work for a coach as well as a fighter.
Yeah, no, it's been, it was a heck of a fight. Obviously, it's great to get the win. You know, it's just, there's been a lot of big nights, but it was definitely a big one going into Texas, kind of being on the away side and coming out with a win in a really obviously close and tough fight.
So what have you done for the last week and a half? How do you manage to get back to reality? Do you just fly straight back to Connecticut? Do you get straight back to work?
Yeah, I flew back the next day. So I just kind of hit the ground and get right back into it. So there's not too much downtime, but doesn't mean I can't enjoy it. That's for sure.
And is it rewatching the fight that allows you to enjoy it a little bit more? Is it just thinking about how you felt in the moment, or how do you manage to soak in that enjoyment from a big win?
When I rewatch the fight, I'm not really there to enjoy it or not enjoy it. I'm kind of just taking a look at really what happened and having a real close look, because obviously when you're there and you're in the corner, you know, you've got emotions running high. And once that kind of settles down, you can look back and take a look at, you know, what we did well and what we didn't maybe do so well and kind of just absorb what actually happened.
Top line on both of those columns, what did you do well? What didn't you do well?
We came out with a win. It's a tough fight. I think Amanda and Katie, they could fight 100 times and it's always going to be razor close. There's going to be people that think we won. There's going to be people that think, you know, Amanda won. They just, the way they match up and where they are at in their career, they're evenly matched, and that's why you get great fights. Looking back, I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, if we could maybe do differently was, you know, we were out of action for a year. So a year's a long layoff, you know, especially at this stage in your career. I don't think it helped us, but, you know, just the way the circumstances were.
Is it particularly tough for Katie at this stage in her career to go a year without fighting? When you get older, do you need to be fighting a little bit more regularly to keep yourself a bit sharper?
I don't It's not necessarily a matter of age. It's just, you know, just to stay sharp. You know, it's one thing. You obviously you're in the gym and you're training and you're keeping your body fit, but just the experience of the fight night, the nerves, the emotions of the week, the pre-fight, you know, and not having gone through that in a year, it's a long time. You know, you kind of like forget some of the things. Okay. You know, like the nervous anxiety that you have the week of, and, you know, she had to kind of go through that for the first time in a year. So, you know, whereas Serrano obviously fought in July, you know, would have been nice to get one in between.
For sure. How do you manage to replicate that where possible? Is there anything that you can do to try and create those jitters, to create those pre-fight nerves in that full year beforehand? Because it seems like such an important part for the mental preparation.
I mean, we have good sparring, you know, and Katie's experience, obviously. I think today's actually 8 years she's been professional as of today. So,
right.
You know, obviously, you know, she's an experienced fighter. So, but, you know, there's certain things you just can't replicate. There's nothing like getting under the bright lights in front of a crowd and, you know, and just experiencing that. You can't replicate that in the gym, no matter how hard you try.
So when you watch the fight back, Ross, are you watching it with commentary or without commentary?
Well, I did both.
Right.
You know, I think the commentary was obviously biased against us. It's pretty obvious. I mean, there's, you know, one instance, I think it was obviously the first round was kind of a cagey round and we got caught at the end of the round with a few seconds left. So we lose the first round and then we boxed better in the second round. And I thought even better in the third round, we actually won on all three of the judges' scorecards. But to start the fourth round, the commentary begins the round by saying, "This is the fourth round and there's concern in the corner of the undisputed champion." It's like, we just had our best round, you know, but you're painting this picture of concern and, you know, it's how you create bias. And it's how you, you know, you have kind of common viewers that are watching it and thinking, "Oh, wow, like there's trouble in the, you know, in Katie's corner, she must be losing." And it paints a picture, you know, and that we knew we were up against that. So, you know, I watched it with the commentary just for curiosity, but, you know, that you see a different fight when you turn the commentary off, obviously.
I can imagine it was pretty extraordinary. And I was just watching it back another time myself this morning. And again, it is quite astonishing, even when the decision is announced at the end and listening to what they were saying on Netflix afterwards. And, you know, I think a cauldron of controversy is what the main commentator refers to Texas as. One of the co-commentators refers to an asterisk on Taylor's legacy, how you can rob Amanda Serrano after that performance. It was quite an astonishing series of sentences at the in the aftermath of one of the great fights that Taylor just about edged, and fairly so.
Yeah, and look, it's a close fight. You know, there's no one disputing that, but close fights aren't robberies, right? You know, it's like everyone wants the best to fight the best. You get the best in there. They give it their all. It's a razor close fight. You know, there's going to be people that think one fighter won. There's going to be people that think the other fighter won. That's what you want in boxing. That's what creates excitement, and that's what it was. But when you look at, you know, some big names, you got, you know, Shakur Stevenson, Terrence Crawford, Teddy Atlas, Caleb Plant. These are all people that saw the fight. They're boxing people. They're fighters. They're the best in the world at what they do. And they saw us edging a close fight. So when you see something like that, it gives you a little bit of reassurance as opposed to, you know, an anonymous person on Twitter who's, you know, talking out their ass.
Yeah, for sure. I do wonder to what extent it matters, though, because obviously it's the co-main event of a bout that maybe exposed boxing to a new audience, people who maybe would have come from a YouTube background who maybe hadn't watched too many pro fights themselves. There's kind of a duty for the commentator to educate and bring people along and paint a picture without a whole pile of bias. Like, everybody's got their unconscious bias, and that's totally fine. And if you're friends with Amanda Serrano, that's totally fine. But was it a bit careless, I do wonder?
No, I think so. I mean, like you said, you have a responsibility. You've got millions of people around the world that probably some of them haven't watched a fight in years. Maybe this is the first time they're putting on Netflix. Oh, Netflix Live, let me check this out. You have a responsibility to call the fight fairly. Just call what you see. And again, you know, I'm not pointing fingers, but Rosie Perez, not, I don't know Rosie Perez, but, you know, I remember, I think Do the Right Thing was like late 80s. You know, we had like White Man Can't Jump in the early 90s. That's the extent of what I know of Rosie Perez. She's a boxing fan, but does that mean she's qualified to commentate on the most viewed fight in history? Probably not. You know, I mean, but, and when we heard that, I knew she's going to beat Pro Serrano, you know, and obviously it doesn't affect us. We just have to go out there and execute our plan and win the fight. But again, it does, you know, you'd like to have an evenly called fight just for the fans.
For sure. And Rosie Perez is the voice who says this is an asterisk on Taylor's legacy. And if you're just watching the fight as a bystander, you're like, oh, this person who knows what they're talking about has said that Katie Taylor's legacy is damaged. And there's a chance that if you are not overly familiar with the sport or with Katie Taylor or Amanda Serrano, you're like, okay, that's now my opinion of this fighter. The bad person won here and her legacy is tarnished.
100%. I mean, Katie's obviously huge in Ireland, but, you know, there's parts of the world where Netflix is airing that they probably haven't heard much about Katie Taylor. Maybe they didn't know much about Amanda Serrano either, but they're watching it and they're engrossed in this exciting fight. And now they're walking away like, oh, you know, wait a minute, the wrong fighter won, when it's not the case. It was a close, hard-fought fight. Could have gone either way. Could have been a draw. Like, you couldn't have made an argument either way, but we just edged it. It was a close fight. And the funny thing is, even if you watch the fight back, Serrano's corner, I think they went to him in the eighth or ninth round, and he's kind of like, oh, you know, I think we're up by one round. So you're basically saying that you think you're up by a round with a round or two to go. That's a close fight. So you can't then kind of shift gears and say, oh, it was a massive robbery. No, because you yourself said it was a one-round fight.
That's a good point. Did they ask you if you wanted to speak during the fight?
No, they never came to me, which I'm okay with. I don't actually like speaking during the fight. Obviously, you're in the moment, but no, it was, they never came over.
Yeah, and like, to an extent, you can kind of forgive Serrano's corner for being really passionate about it and saying stuff off the cuff and being in the heat of the moment, right?
Yeah, if their emotions are running wild. Look, you know, we want to win. They want to win. You know, the first fight was obviously super close. You know, you can't, I don't fault them. Listen, you know, you say things. If everyone was judged at what they said at one of the most emotional times in their life, I think we'd all, you know, have some, you know, things to answer for. But,
yeah, and obviously Amanda herself wrote back a little bit on her public pronouncements afterwards. The one thing, though, that might carry over from that is just the headbutting allegations, Ross. What was your take on what was said by Jordan Maldonado, by the Serrano corner, with regards to Taylor's headbutting?
You know, listen, you have, obviously, you know, you have a lefty and a righty. Yeah. You know, you're going to be more prone to headbutt. Doesn't happen all the time. But you've also got Serrano, who's intent on coming for it. She's a pressure fighter, she's trying to come forward at us. And Katie, in this fight, held her ground a little bit more than in the first fight, where she's trying to sit down on some shots and get some respect. And then you couple that with fatigue as the rounds are going by, legs are getting tired. Yeah, there's going to be some contact inside. Sometimes it's head positioning, where you're trying to get your head off the line. Sometimes, you know, actually, you know, if you look at the video, there are instances where they both actually meet each other with their heads, where if you watch it in slow motion, I don't know who's to blame, you know, neither of them to blame, but they're both meeting each other. And you're going to get that in gritty, in close, kind of bang them out fights, you know, and it lets other people kind of chime in like, oh, it happened in the Cameron fight. Like, if you watch the second Cameron fight and you go to the eighth round, Cameron literally like jumps into us and headbutts Katie in the cheek. It was the worst headbutt of the fight. We never talked about it, so you never hear about it, but she had bruising in her cheek for several weeks after the fight. But again, we don't jump on social media and say, oh, poor me, look what happened to me. We just kind of get on with things, where if you keep going to it, you know, people kind of latch on like, oh, look at all these headbutts. I think Roy Jones, during the commentary, he was actually at least neutral there, where he was kind of saying, listen, she's not doing it on purpose. It's the nature of this type of fight. Yeah. But again, the commentary, the other commentators kind of paint that picture. Oh, look at the headbutts. Because even in the eighth round, when the point's taken, if you look at what happened in slow motion, there wasn't a headbutt that had occurred at the time the point was taken. So, yeah, there had been contact. We got cut too. Katie got stitches in the dressing room after the fight, which, you know, again, we don't talk about it, but she was getting sewed up while the Tyson Paul fight was going on.
The point being taken then, that could have proved crucial had Serrano actually won the fight. And from why did he deduct the point at that point of the fight then?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. You know, it's like you wonder where it came from. You know, obviously their corner was complaining. So, you know, was he influenced by that? You know, only he knows what led him to do it at that given time. Obviously, you know, I'm seeing the point getting taken and I'm thinking, wow, this is a really close fight. Like that could cost us the fight. You know, you got to let the fighters kind of figure it out themselves in that type of fight. You can't interject yourself into the fight and make yourself one of the players. Let the fighters figure it out for themselves. But, you know, fortunately, it didn't work against us and we still came out on top.
Yeah, that is fortunate in the end. But like, was it the sense that there was a hometown decision there a little bit in that point being deducted?
Only the ref knows, yeah. You know, and hope that wouldn't be the case. But, you know, it seemed like kind of a strange moment to suddenly say, hey, wait a minute. Okay, that's a point, okay. You know, because there wasn't contact at the time he jumped in. So
can I ask Ross, just in general, the whole week, the fight, the aftermath, as you said at the top, it was an away day for Team Taylor. There's no getting away from that. But were you surprised by the level of how much this was a Serrano fight, by how much you guys really felt like outsiders in terms of the whole experience here?
Like MVP, I mean, and honestly, like they were great to us. I did, you know, I thought during the week, you know, they were really, you know, hospitable and they were friendly to us. So we didn't have any problems throughout the week. You know, on fight night, it's going to be a little bit different. Obviously, everyone wants to win. And, you know, Akisa was kind of sitting right next to the corner and he was screaming during the fight. But I don't blame him. You know, Serrano's his fighter and he's emotional. He wants to win. I mean, I'd probably be doing the same thing. But we were treated fine during the week. You know, I can't say that they, you know, treated us poorly or unfairly at all.
When you're in the corner, do you know what people are saying? Can you hear specifically what somebody like Nikisa is saying? Can you hear the individual barbs being thrown from the sidelines?
I heard certain things. You're not listening, obviously, but he's literally like 5 feet to my left. Mm. And, you know, there were some people that were like screaming some ridiculous things into the ring directly at Katie, where it's like, I mean, really, like, have a little bit of class. But obviously you're just it's in and out because we're worried about the fight itself. But you know, you do hear certain things and you're sitting there like, I mean, really though, like, you know, you shouldn't say that to anyone, you know, particularly like two athletes that are giving it their all, like fighting their heart out for your entertainment, you know.
And was that the most vitriolic you had seen the environment around a Taylor fight?
Maybe. I mean, you know, typically, obviously, you know, Katie's always been on matchroom shows where, you know, we are the home fighter. So, you know, I guess from that standpoint, it was a little bit different. I mean, there's always going to be people against you. You know, you can't really give them any attention because you don't want to, you know, bring that into your own mind and, you know, change the way what you should be doing. You got to focus on your own job, which me is just kind of helping Katie navigate through the fight.
You've also got to stay unbelievably calm because you need to know exactly how you're going to get your message across in that very short window in between rounds. I think we only got you mic'd up on 3 occasions between rounds, but you can tell from after round one, it's a very tactical, cold analysis of what Katie needs to do in the second round onwards, whereas they go back to you right before the final round and it's a much more emotional thing, you know. You've got to fight like a dog, and that change in tone, that I presume that's a very, very important part of your gig in that moment.
Well, you know, early in the fight, obviously you can talk tactics, and obviously yeah. You have to know your fighter. But you know, when you're in the 9th or 10th round and you know both fighters are tired, it's not really a time to be talking about tactics. You know, they're both spent at this point. You've got to bite down on your mouthpiece and go get it. And that's one thing that Katie has done unbelievably well throughout her career. Like when it gets gritty and it gets tough, like she is willing to give everything she has in there. And that's one of the reasons it's so frustrating when you see all these people talking crap basically about her. It's like, put some respect on her name. I mean, you know, not only is she how much she's done for the sport itself, but I mean, she literally gives every ounce that she has to the fight. I mean, she was on E in the 10th round and she's just letting it go. And most people have no idea what that takes. Like you have to go somewhere that a lot of people, they want to think they can go there, but until you're in that situation, you never really know. And Katie's done it time and time again.
Was Katie affected by the negativity around it?
No, she's actually great like that. She actually pays no attention to it. I don't even think she reads any of the comments on social media. So she trusts the people that are close to her. And obviously, you know, those people are telling her positive things. So you know, as far as what a stranger's saying, you know, it's not even in one ear and out the other. I don't even think she's hearing it. So, which is good. It's like social media is vile. I mean, there's, you know, you get opinions and they all feed off of each other, and you could drive yourself crazy if you actually read all the comments.
Yeah, for sure. We were speaking to her a couple of weeks before the fight, and she was making the point that she thinks she's getting better and better at this stage of her career. Is that what you're seeing as well in training, that because maybe she went to the pro ranks a little bit later than some of her contemporaries, that actually she's still growing and developing as a fighter?
I mean, you want to always think you're developing. You know, it's like, you know, it's hard to think about, you know, she's had 8 years of professional experience now. So obviously she's had some really great performances. She's obviously a lot more experienced as far as, you know, dealing with the nerves of the fight and, you know, the pre-week craziness where they're pulling you here and there, and you've got to go to a press conference, you got to do pictures, sign this, and it can be draining. So she's definitely matured, and she can get through that a lot more, where she doesn't get as worked up. Even about early on, press conference, she used to be real stressed out about the press conferences. For now, she just kind of takes it in stride, and you know, just get on with things. Let's just get to fight night, and get on with the fight.
Where does, as you say, when in that final round, you're a dog, you're built for this shit, I think is your words to her in the corner. Where does that come from in Katie Taylor? What is keeping that fire lighting inside her, do you think?
You know, you're born with it. Like, you know, it's like one of my old coaches always said, you either have heart or you don't. You can't really give it to someone. And she was definitely born with it. You know, she's got an unusual heart. And, you know, obviously you can train and push yourself, but no matter what you do in the gym, you're going to get tired in the fight. Like, people don't realize that. You think, like, you train so hard, I'm not going to get tired. No, you're going to get tired. Like, Ali was probably the greatest fighter ever at fighting tired. You're going to get tired. You're going to have to deal with it. And, you know, Katie's, she can deal with it. You know, she can bite down. And it's been the difference in a lot of the close fights that she's had, because she's willing to go places that even other great fighters aren't willing to go.
When did you first realize that you would go to those places?
You know, it's hard to pinpoint. I mean, you can see it in the gym, even, like, you know, it's obviously she's ultra competitive, which helps. You know, it's like you don't want anyone to get the best of you. So, you know, you see it when she's training with others, when she's sparring. But obviously, again, it's different. You know, when you're in a tight fight and, you know, we got the last two or three rounds and it's razor close, like I said, she's willing to bite down and go for it. You know, and it's, we've had to do it at different times throughout our career. And like I said, I've never seen, you know, I don't think anybody like that. I mean, like, you know, she's had fights. People have no idea. Like, she's had fights where she won a world title and had torn her calf. You know, like, there's people that wouldn't be able to walk up a flight of stairs. She's out there fighting 10 rounds, you know, winning a world championship with a torn muscle in her leg, and never said a word about it. Never said a word about it. Wouldn't even have, you know, thought of mentioning it to pull out of the fight. Like, she's just built different in that regard.
Have you started to think about what's next?
Not too much. I mean, it's like, you know, you're just kind of coming off of, obviously, you know, a year. You know, we've kind of been preparing for this on and off for the last year. So it's hard to know. I mean, obviously, I think there's people talking about fighting Serrano again. And, you know, so I don't know what's going to come of that. I don't know, you know, how many fights Katie, you know, has left or wants to have left. Obviously, that's a personal decision that, you know, she needs to sit down and think about. But, you know, I'm assuming it, you know, it might be Serrano next again. There might be a third fight. There's a lot of people obviously calling for it. But, you know, probably just have to get through to the new year and see what comes.
Surely Serrano as a home fight, maybe not necessarily in geography, but as a home promotion at this point, Ross, is what you would personally want.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you know, to, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to it. That's for sure.
One really fascinating point in Katie's career over the past few years, and it's a very obvious thing to bring up, is the defeat to Chantel Cameron. How important was that in terms of where she's at the moment and in keeping that fight going in her own career at the moment? Because I know that you've written quite a lot in the past, and certainly in one of your books, about just failure and how you approach failure and how that drives you on and how you deal with that. How does your view on how you deal with failure align with Katie Taylor's view on failure? And maybe that word is too strong a word to use with regards to the Cameron defeat, because it was an unbelievable fight, but it was still a defeat on the record. So how important has that been?
I don't don't know. You know, obviously you don't want to have to go through that lesson if you don't need to. You know, we would have preferred to obviously win that night. But, you know, as far as how important it was, I mean, she did pretty well prior to that. You know, has it changed her? I don't know if it's changed her, but, you know, she was certainly very hungry after that defeat, wanting to right the wrong when we fought Cameron again. Like she had Cameron on her mind, you know, day in and day out. Like she needs to get that back. She needs to get that fight. She's just got that competitiveness that, like I said, it's just who she is. She was born that way. But as far as like, you know, the significance or the importance, like I said, you know, if it was up to us, we would have never had that lesson. But, you know, certainly how you deal with failure, you know, it can definitely make or break you, you know, because not everybody responds like that. You know, some people maybe let it get into their head and say, man, you know, maybe I don't have it anymore, where, you know, that wasn't even a thought in her mind. She knew she could be better than she was that night. And, you know, she proved that she was.
How has the last 8 years changed your life, Ross? Obviously, you've had a very successful life in sport before Katie Taylor messages you out of the blue and you start to research who this woman is and you realize how brilliant she is and she comes and visits you and you guys have been on this amazing journey for the last 8 years. I presume it's totally changed your life, but at the same time, it seems that her training and your setup is focused on basics and maybe at a fundamental level, your day-to-day is actually not that different to what it used to be.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm pretty low key. So, I mean, I wouldn't say it's really changed too much. Right. You know, I would be in the gym anyway. So obviously we've had some pretty amazing, you know, nights and moments and, you know, like that you would have never imagined 8 years ago today when she had her first pro fight. But, you know, as far as the day to day goes, you know, I don't think a whole lot's actually changed, to be honest with you, as crazy as that might sound.
Yeah, like obviously, as I say, you had a very successful sporting career before Taylor arrives in your life. I presume when you look back, when you make the decision to go from a very successful career in the business world into full time in terms of coaching and in the sports world, it's a sliding doors moment in your life that you've got absolutely no regrets about at this point.
No, none at all. I mean, like I said, it, you know, it's like not many, you know, people could have, you know, could have imagined kind of being on this journey. So to go through it myself, you know, it's certainly been a fun ride. Like we've had, you know, we fought in, you know, Wembley and sold out Madison Square Garden, fighting at, you know, Dallas Cowboys Stadium. So it's like, who would ever imagine that 8 years ago today when we had our first fight?
Yeah, it's been remarkable. Ross, can I ask you what's in the photo behind your back there, just on the Zoom link?
Fenway Park. I'm a Red Sox fan. Yeah.
Ah, very good. Because I know that you're a big Patriots fan as well. Do you take in the Red Sox aspect? Do you take in the Patriots aspects at all when you're trying to motivate yourself as a coach or inform yourself as a coach?
Not this year. Patriots are having a rough season. No, I mean, Bill Belichick, obviously, when he was with the Patriots, you know, he's one of my favorite coaches. I mean, he can, you know, I don't think anyone could not learn from him. Just listen to him. But, you know, he obviously set a great example as far as, you know, what's expected and, you know, work ethic and, you know, dedication and discipline and, you know, all things that obviously, you know, Katie brings to the table, you know, as an athlete herself. So
just one last question then. Eddie Hearn was on with us last week and he specifically made reference to the Sphere in Las Vegas. We were asking about Crow Park as well. And he said that there are a couple of the things that Taylor really wants to do. Fight in Vegas, fighting Croke Parker are definitely on her wish list. Do you get a sense from her that she has a particular hierarchy on one of those ultimate destinations?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, she probably would say that in an interview, but, you know, the reality is, like, you know, when it comes down to it, I don't really think she cares who's there when she's fighting. You know, it's like, I know it's the right thing to say, you know, that she wants to fight here or there, but when we're there, it's just, we don't really see anybody. You know, there could be 8 people or 80,000, we still got to go out there and win the fight. So, you know, obviously I think she probably wanted to fight in Vegas once because she never did. And, you know, Crow Park, I know that was kind of, you know, it's been on and off. I mean, I don't know if that'll ever happen. You know, it would have been nice, but I don't know if the ship has already sailed.
Yeah, we will see. We will see. Well, fingers crossed, maybe one day it will. Ross, thank you so much for your time today. And congratulations once again on another brilliant win with Katie. We'll chat to you again soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.